Welcome to the See You Next Summer podcast. I'm your host, Billy Polihan, and with me, as always, is the Carol Ann to that little woman medium person. I don't know her name, but I know her real name was Zelda. Anyway, with me, as always, is Raul Rodriguez. How you doing, buddy?
They're here! And how are you doing, guys? Today, we're gonna do a movie that scared the crap out of me when I was a kid. One of the only movies that scared the crap out of me when I was a kid. The original Poltergeist from 1982. I think that's the year.
1982. Yeah, mm-hmm. You were correct. In your face, Scott Mance. Yeah, directed by Texas Chainsaw Massacre director Tobe Hooper, with a story producer credit and...
Screenplay
by Steven Spielberg.
Mm-hmm.
And produced by Spielberg and Lucasfilm regular Frank Marshall.
And associate producer Kathleen Kennedy. It's one of the first things that she did with Spielberg.
That's true. It was. Oh, and
this movie has a lot of story, but this movie also has a lot of story outside of the movie, too. I think I told Billy part of the story, but I don't know if you knew about the story of the Poltergeist curse before seeing the movie.
I did know about the Poltergeist curse. And it's a very tragic but very interesting bit of history.
Mm-hmm.
And the Poltergeist curse refers to the events after the movie. And it's not just in this movie, but it's this entire franchise.
Mm-hmm.
There's a thing about it being cursed because of some unfortunate events that happened to members of the cast and crew. Most famously, little Carol Ann, Heather O'Rourke, died when she was only 12.
A really freaky heart incident that she had when she was 12.
Yeah, it sucked, man.
Yeah, especially because, like, for example, right after the Poltergeist came out, the teenage girl, she was hanged or by her boyfriend, and then that's the way that she got killed. In the second one, the actor that portrayed the shaman also died, and also a lot of freaky stuff also happened during the shooting, because this is the controversy about the movie. In the scene when the mom, she's between all of the mud and trying to to understand what's going on, she sees all of the cadavers. Those were not props. They were real cadavers. Real corpses.
Even though they will say that it's not, that is not true.
I still think it's true.
It is what they do say. I like to think it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it gives more of the feeling of authenticity. And yeah, mm-hmm. You'd be scared knowing that those were real.
Mm-hmm.
But this is Poltergeist. The basic premise of this movie is that it's a family in California, suburban mm-hmm. family, and their home is invaded by ghosts that take their daughter.
Mm-hmm.
They're poltergeists. Ties into last week's Beetlejuice episode, because Beetlejuice himself was a poltergeist, but that was the crazy wacky poltergeist. No, this is like the this is the serious kind of poltergeist, where it's very Paranormal Activity, I feel like, took a lot from this movie in many respects.
Paranormal Activity, Dark Skies, Insidious, the Poltergeist remake.
A lot of horror movies in general have taken a lot from this movie. This is one of the most influential, and this is on like top 100 lists all the time. This is one of the most famous movies that we're probably going to cover on here, and I'm very excited.
Yeah, and especially, this is the other thing about talking about the movie. It has been for years that even at the Directors Guild of America, there was even a trial to determine who directed this movie, if it was Tobe Hooper or Steven Spielberg.
Yeah, there is there's a whole creative credit.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why Spielberg didn't direct this was because he was preparing to direct E.T. and Universal wouldn't let him, because there's a clause in his contract. And it says, according to Toby Hooper, the very core concept of the film was an idea he pitched to Spielberg after turning down the offer to direct Night Skies. Mm. Now that you mention Night Skies.
Well, I said Dark Skies.
Dark Skies. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
No. Great movie. If a lot of people haven't seen it, fucking amazing twist at the end.
You know, it's crazy. Poltergeist is in that same vein. I think it was the same weekend. Or E.T. and Poltergeist were released a week apart from each other in 1982.
Also, Blade Runner didn't got released also almost at the same month.
It was one of the most famous weekends in movie history. Where, like, all these super good, famous movies were competing at the box office. Obviously, E.T. won. Because E.T. is one of the highest grossing movies ever.
Mm-hmm.
It beat Star Wars, which is a big freaking deal, because Star Wars was the highest grossing movie of all time, made by Spielberg's friend George Lucas, which we have covered, obviously.
I love how they compete each other. Like, also, the Spielberg, this is a Spielberg production with Poltergeist, and then Spielberg one-up himself in Jurassic Park, but George was like, in Phantom Menace, he up with Spielberg.
They're upping each other, because Spielberg even broke his own record with Jurassic Park.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that is saying something, because movie box office back then was a lot different than movie box office now. Movie box office now, it's like a month and a half, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
That's how long it was. Back then, they could go on forever, for months, maybe half a year. That's why Titanic made so much money. It was because it was released for like a year and a half, and people just kept coming back, and it kept getting number one almost every single week. I forget how many consecutive weeks it was, but that's why it made so much money.
Yeah, and
if you adjust it for inflation, those numbers are even bigger.
Because
movie ticket prices now are like double, sometimes triple what they were back then. So that's it's a big deal.
Yeah,
it's crazy to think.
I think in Titanic times, a movie ticket was like $2.50 or $3.50, and now it's like $8. And you're not in LA, but you're in LA, $17.
Like, I've seen ticket prices go up to like $23 if it's like an IMAX 3D or whatever, and it's like, I'm not paying that much to see a movie, maybe a subpar movie.
You want to see IMAX here at Universal? That's the expensive ticket. That's $28 after $7.
$28? That's not even including tax.
No, it's including
tax. You're kidding. Mm-hmm. Okay, I was about to say, because I'm like, you're kidding. Just $28 on its own.
But AMC A-list, baby.
This is not going to be an AMC A-list ad. Reviews.
Yeah, but going back to the movie, I still think that these two movies were shot almost at the same time, because the streets and the house, they look super similar as the neighborhood of E.T.
Yeah, I believe they were both shot in California, which is where, obviously, Spielberg is from, I believe.
I think also George.
Oh, no, he was born in Ohio,
in
Cincinnati, but he went to film school in California, obviously. He was he was in the same class as George Lucas. That's why they were best friends. They're still best friends.
Mm-hmm.
But I agree. They use a lot of the same sets and like the same cul-de-sac.
It wouldn't be far-fetched if the E.T. just like he's just walking and seeing a Yoda, because it was like a and like 10 blocks from that house. But yeah, this movie starts, we kind of like we see a classic thing. I don't know if children from this generation will get it, but back then TV stopped transmitting around 2 a.m. They put out the national anthem, and also in Mexico they did that. The national anthem was on, and then it was so static. So
they don't do that anymore. Now it's just 24-hour television. But back then, you could only watch TV up to a certain point.
Yep.
You might remember they do the same thing in Toy Story 2.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was how I knew what it was originally.
Interesting.
But also, yeah, hi to the background people. I hear you screwing up our damn podcast like you do every week.
Yeah, and so we see Carol Ann. She's waking up. She hears the static, and she just says, talking to us, she's like, yes, yes, I don't know. And she touches the TV, but then a ray of light goes through the house and through the wall. And then the next day, and also the earth starts shaking. And so the father, Craig T. Nelson, Mr. Incredible, thinks that there was an earthquake in the house. And it was like, and no one felt it. He's talking on the phone. But then we see that Carol Ann's, I think it was Carol Ann, her Tweety Bird just died. And I love the man. I was like, couldn't just wait for school then? Damn you, bird. And yeah, I love that so she's about to flush it. And Carol Ann was like, ah!
Connor, just in time.
Yeah.
So yeah, the family, they're the Freelings. Mm-hmm. There's the patriarch, Steve Freeling. Once you said Craig T. Nelson, mm-hmm. Mr. Incredible. And he's young, too. It's so weird. Just every time he spoke, though, I was just like, it's Mr. Incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a real estate agent. So, and he works for a firm mm-hmm. As a for a land developer. Mm-hmm. And then that's why he's able to afford a pretty good house in California with three kids and a spouse. I mean, that's, you got to make a ridiculous amount of money in there. And so he lives with his in Cuesta Verde.
Mm-hmm.
And he lives with his wife, Diane, and mm-hmm. Their three kids. There's the teenager, Dana, played by mm-hmm. The late Dominique Dunn. And the two younger ones, Robbie and little Carol Ann, whom we just mentioned before. She is the most famous person in this movie, or the person that you will recognize most, because she's the little blonde girl. She is just the cutest thing
mm-hmm. As
well. And she's on the poster with her having her hands on the TV. It's a very famous movie poster.
Iconic shot.
You don't know what we're talking about, you have probably seen the poster. It's the same thing with Beetlejuice, mm-hmm. Oddly enough, where it's famous posters. And that's another thing I wanted to tie into it. David Geffen produced Beetlejuice. Mm-hmm. Steven Spielberg obviously made the story and produced this. Both of them were two of the three founders of DreamWorks. Now that, like, it's a weird connection.
Wow.
People often forget that Spielberg helped found DreamWorks.
Yes, I do.
It was his idea to do Prince of Egypt.
Yeah,
because they were just like, they were like, what are we going to do for our first feature? And then Spielberg went, let's just do Ten Commandments.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeffrey Katzenberg, who you also know, he used to be the CEO of Disney.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the very famous Quibi idea. He wanted to do something like that at Disney. Obviously, Disney doesn't do that,
mm-hmm. And
so they made their own company. It's crazy little things like that.
Also, thank you, Spielberg, because of DreamWorks, we got the Shrek trilogy, we got Kung Fu Panda, How to Train Your Dragon, the Road to El Dorado, Prince of Egypt.
And a lot of great movies.
One of my favorite movies from DreamWorks, Wes Craven's Red Eye, with the great Cillian Murphy and I forgot her name right now, Regina George.
Oh, Rachel McAdams. And yeah, Rachel you're McAdams. Talking about the live action, like DreamWorks portion.
DreamWorks.
Like, he helped found just DreamWorks as a company, not just DreamWorks Animation.
Mm-hmm.
There is a difference between the two.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, they live in California, and it's a pretty okay house. For the mm-hmm. '80s? Definitely. I just loved Robbie's room as well, because it's just full of Star Wars stuff.
Yes.
He has a Star Wars poster, little Vader thing on his bed, the Star Wars bed sheets.
Mm-hmm.
Those are also very famous bed sheets. Every kid in the 80s had one.
in the C-3PO thing that I told you, the light switch, that was pretty damn cool.
The 3PO light switch and this terrifying fucking clown.
Yes.
I hate this thing with a passion. It's so scary looking. And he's put on a chair literally right across from where he's sleeping, looking at him. I'm like, how the... These parents are fucking cruel. They must really hate their son.
In your face, Annabelle. That fucking clown is way scarier than Annabelle.
Ooh, the hot takes.
The hot take, yes. But also, I love saying that, in your face, Annabelle. But yeah, that damn fucking clown scared me. But we got sweet revenge when one of the Wayans raped him in Scary Movie 2.
Anyway, yeah, but the next morning after what you said, there was a thunderstorm, and I like that this movie takes time to just show the Freelings just living. You know, it just shows what each of them do, particularly the Diane, the wife, and they're a good, loving family. They're like anybody else,
and they're pretty chill too.
They're like, yeah, they are. They're a pretty good nuclear family. And then, of course, the night in the storm where the little kids are sleeping, when the parents, who clearly still have passion in their marriage, by the way.
And weed.
Craig T. Nelson's, yes, and weed and Craig T. Nelson's fucking chest hair.
Damn. I'm just going to like, say,
that's a, daddy. That's a healthy, that's that's a healthy amount. Another chest hair.
That young.
He's got those glasses too. That those frames that are ridiculously 80s. Every guy seemed to have. If you had glasses,
my father had them.
Yeah. That's when you see Carol Ann go to the TV where it's the. And a fair warning: if you're epileptic, do not watch this movie. There is so, because you see the flashing of the TV, like, if you're epileptic, which means you're more prone to seizures and stuff, you will probably get a seizure from this, because there are so many blinking lights, and just flashing lights in general, especially the last act.
J.J. Abrams had an orgasm watching this movie when he was a kid. He was like,
or he's the thing, he was the thing that was like, this is the movie where he's like, I want to do that.
Yes, he was like, like, more of that.
Yeah. That's when we see the creepy mist come from the TV and create a big, I guess, portal hole. And that's when you get the famous "they're here" thing. And all I kept thinking throughout this entire movie was the fucking Family Guy episode where they parody Poltergeist.
Yes.
I was like, man. Remember when Family Guy used to do, like, legit awesome parodies? Not just Star Wars, but just, like, make fun of movies in general. And they had a whole episode dedicated to Poltergeist.
No, the most iconic scene from that Family Guy parody is when Herbert, the old creepy guy, he goes and kills the three two tower style, that we see the whole battle of them, like, falling, like, in two towers. It's like, killing them with his walker. And I'm like... That's iconic.
Yeah. That scary clown, it's Ronald McDonald.
Yes.
I mean, to be fair, it's Ronald McDonald.
He is
a clown. Clowns are terrifying. And then it shows the next morning, everybody's having breakfast, and the dad's just like, I don't know, because it, like you said, it shook everything. Like an earthquake. Oh, yeah. I also, one of the funny scenes, because there's a bit of comedy in here, is when Craig T. Nelson's friends are over to watch the football game. First of all, these little shits cause one of his friends, who's not even driving, he has a bike with a ton of beer, to drop the beer. And one of the beers, like, there's a hole poked in it, so it's just spraying beer everywhere. I'm like, if that was me, if somebody did that in my house, I would be like, get out. Or drink that that can, because they're trying to watch the Rams. they're watching the Rams, I think, Packers game, and then it switches to Mr. Rogers. And they're like, who the hell is this guy? And he's like, oh, it's my neighbor. He's trying, we're on the same frequency. Or he's like, we have the same dish. And he's just like, hey, man, we're trying to watch the football game. And he's like, yeah, well, my kid's trying to watch Mr. Rogers. And they have a battle where they keep going, switching the channel every single time. It's great.
And also talking about nostalgia, the big ass remotes. But the way that they're like, you see, they hear the button and it was like, ah, nostalgia.
Those TVs as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not like the big screen TVs today.
I remember I was like 4 years old getting up to turn the dial. My parents had a really old TV of dial one. And like
Saturday morning cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
Every kid, you would want to sleep in Saturday, but you had to get up early if you wanted to watch cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually was part of that last generation where you would have to watch Saturday morning. Not even Saturday morning, just Saturday afternoon.
Mm.
Or after school. There's the famous after school specials, but there's also just cartoons would typically air after you get home from school.
Mm-hmm.
And I just miss that so much. And they're having breakfast, and oh, the dad, he's trying to tie his tie.
Mm-hmm.
And the tie gets stuck in the phone wire.
Yeah.
Because, again, no wireless phones back then.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody had home phones. Or they had one phone that everybody used.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, because having multiple phones, that means that you're rich. In those times.
Especially, they're rich. They have a decent home in California, but even they're not that rich.
Yeah, they're not that rich.
No, they're pretty well off. They're pretty middle class.
Mm-hmm.
But they make a... They're slightly above middle class, but not like high society or anything like that.
And but also technically, yeah. There were two TVs in the house, technically, right? One in
That's
their
true,
room
they did.
And one in downstairs.
It did help that he helped develop or he helped develop the land.
Mm-hmm. And we know that he has one of the first houses in that settlement. That there's mm-hmm. kind of like different phases of it.
You'd think that his boss might have given him something. Because we see also that he's a really good real estate agent.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's selling to these people and he's very charming. He's what you would want a good real estate agent to be. And I love that his tie gets caught up in the phone wire. And then inexplicably, Robbie's glass breaks in the cereal, mm-hmm. causes it splash milk all over Dana's homework as she's mm-hmm. going to school. And they're still constructing the house, by the way. They're getting a pool installed, mm-hmm. which is why there's bulldozers and stuff. They're making an indoor, or they're making a pool.
Yeah.
And very creepily getting hit on by the construction workers, but she just stops. It looks like at first she's going to do the Macarena,
mm-hmm.
but then she does the arm under the other arm, you know, the universal sign for fuck you. Bites her thumb off at them, which is the Shakespeare way of saying fuck you, and then gives him the finger.
uh-huh.
Yeah, and then, but yeah, the glass, it just broke.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, what the hell? But then we also see Robbie, they're like, okay, put your stuff away. And the utensils are bent.
Mm-hmm.
Like from the ends. So some weird shit is happening. These are little things at first that you think, oh, it's just nothing. It might have been something because it was late at night.
It must be the plans, though, because you don't know what's happening.
Yeah. Is it the TV people? Yeah.
Or the plans? Or hot dogs? They have a cool shape.
Oh, God damn it. At first, because the mom goes out of the room, and this is where I feel like Toby Hooper directed it,
mm-hmm.
because it's the long take.
Mm-hmm.
The mom goes out of the room real quick, and then you get the false jump scare, mm-hmm. which is Carol Ann coming right up next to her, and it's like, oh, you scared me, when somebody just appears behind you. They don't mm-hmm. make a sound. That's the false jump scare. But then she looks down, because she makes a big deal out of, like, I told you guys to push in your chairs, which mm-hmm. every mom did that. My mom did that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she looks away. And then the camera pans right back to the set, and all the chairs are stacked like really weird. And yeah, she's like, ah, she's freaked out. She goes, the TV people.
Oh, you're talking about like inspirations that they from Poltergeist. Remember in Sixth Sense when we see Toni Collette going to do the laundry, and when she comes back to see Haley Joel Osment, we see all of the chairs that way. It's almost the same kind of shot.
Yeah, that's an old horror trick. But this was like when it was used in modern horror. And I love that. And then after that, what happened?
Also, when Ed, we see Ed trying to like selling a new house. I don't know if this is true, but I haven't seen Incredibles in a long time. That shirt and that brown tie and those pants, they look a lot like Mr. Incredible.
But I think that just the face features of Craig T. Nelson look like Mr. Incredible. You know, with like the nose and the face shape. Also, because in animation, toned. They do that all the time. He is pretty toned as well. He's like, he's got the same shape, like body shape as Mr. Incredible. And like when he gets home from work, it's like, oh, okay, honey, I'm home from work. And she's just like, just suspend your disbelief for a few minutes. Come over here. And you saw that there's arrows on the ground and everything to show that they've tested this before. Because the chair moves by itself in very specific directions. And she's like, I think we got ghosts. You got to call a bunch of teenagers and a talking dog.
That would be cool, though.
But yeah, then he's like, nobody's going in the kitchen until we figure out what this is. And then we get this thunderstorm and this tree, this freaking awesome tree, by the way. Scary, like, it's got tree. All the scary looking tree, but it's got all the footholds and everything. It's a great tree to climb. That every little kid also climbed a tree. Didn't matter how tall it was. Every little kid would climb a tree if you had one.
And then, it's a light storm. And this is when we see like kind of like the tree, like slowly you see like the lightning and you see the kid. Also, this is also a recurring thing that has happened during the movie. Robbie gets up and pulls out a jacket of Chewbacca on the top of the clown to not see his face. And all of a sudden, between all of the rain, the tree breaks the window and grabs the kid, and hell breaks loose in that scene. The music is really loud. You can feel the rain. You can feel the rage of the tree. You see that damn tornado. And it scared the fuck out of me when I was a kid. Like, it's a legit, it's still is scary right now. When me seeing it as an adult.
It's really well executed. It's a good balance of Spielberg and Tobe Hooper. Because obviously you get the production value. And the whimsy, as they call it, because Jerry Goldsmith's score, it's very John Williams-esque.
Yes!
Where it's like, doo-doo-doo, like you're kind of like flying over something, like the Superman theme, and it just feels like...
It doesn't feel like a horror kind of music, if you think about it.
No, it's not the intense music that you think of when you think of horror or anything. But that also clashes really well with just the scary moments, which obviously are Tobe Hooper. Because it's stretched, it creates such good tension. You don't know when something's coming. You feel like something's coming. You're like, okay, they set up that tree earlier. What's it going to do? But then it does something unexpected where it's like the tree becomes alive and it takes the kid. And it's during an intense thunderstorm and the music is very swelling up. I thought the tree was going to eat the kid as well. It was weird. I was like, what?
Yeah, like, I still remember me seeing it, and I'm like, in my head, I'm like, I remember that he ate the whole kid, but I was like, not technically not, because Craig T. Nelson comes into the rescue. But at the same time that this is happening, we see Carol Ann, she sees her closet opening, and this big white light is dragging a lot of toys to this white light and slowly sucking everything into the room. As slowly Carol Ann is trying to hold on, not to get sucked in. She's just screaming, "Mommy, Mommy," as we see Robbie getting eaten by the tree. And I think that I never noticed when I was a kid, I did not notice that Robbie was bleeding. That technically that tree was really harming him. I was like, damn, that's a cool detail that I should have noticed when I was a kid. It would have been way scarier. But even though it scared the crap out of me when I was a kid. But, and then Caroline gets sucked into that light and Caroline disappears. And they're trying to look for her and they cannot find her. And I love also this moment. I was like, what is she doing in the swimming pool? And Craig T. Nelson goes into the hole. That the swimming pool is not done yet. It's only the hole. Trying to find for Caroline. As we see Robbie between mud and wetness and also blood, walking around trying to find Caroline too. But he goes into the, sees the static of the TV and he hears, "Mommy, are you there, Mommy? I cannot see you, Mommy." And Robbie's like, and I love, this is a great acting from that kid. He was like trying to scream, but he says, "Ah, Mom," but like, because he just went to super so traumatic.
He almost got eaten by a tree. You can excuse him for freaking out. No, it's great
acting. Yeah, it's great acting.
It felt like, yeah, legit people would freak out like this.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hear Carol Ann through the TV. They slowly realize that, or the mom slowly realizes that. And again, Family Guy, I'm just thinking of Stewie when he's just like, "Hold on, I want to try something. I remember." And he starts singing "In the Air Tonight."
Yes.
Where he's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, you didn't miss anything. Ross and Rachel got back together. It wasn't that great. Yeah, I hear they're doing something with Joey. He's got a spinoff now. I hear it's not good.
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, boy. But yes, they're just like, oh, shit. We don't have Carol Ann.
Mm-hmm.
She's missing. Because they think it's her underneath a blanket, but it's that damn clown.
Mm-hmm.
Why did they even have that thing? And then we see the character's name is Steve. Because of course it's Steve. An 80s movie with Steve in it. Of course. Except he doesn't have his great hair.
And he's not Hawkins, Indiana.
No. But you see that he's clearly traumatized by this. He looks like shit.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes to USC, or UC Irvine. Mm-hmm. Irvine. And he goes with, admittedly, the Ghostbusters. Before they were Ghostbusters, they're parapsychologists.
Or the Ghostfacers, just to make a Supernatural reference.
I knew you were going to say that. And they're just like, "You're not making this up. You're not trying to get any fame or anything." He's just like, "No, we just want our little girl back.
We want to keep it low, too. No police, no FBI.
Come check our house." I was expecting the found footage. Filmmaker to just show like a close-up or they're like from a distance away and you just see the lips moving or something like that. I was just like, that is very Paranormal Activity. And it's Dr. Lesh and her two assistants. There's the black guy and the not black guy but the nerdy looking guy. Their names are Ryan and Marty. And they are just like, okay, what's up? And they're like, yeah, this happened to us like a week ago or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it all started in our children's bedroom. We don't go in there. They won't let us in. They're just like, we'll see about that. Because they're just like, oh, we saw a toy car move by itself for like a couple of hours. They're clearly skeptical, as any normal person would be. Soon as they open that door, though, You get all the bed turning with the clown on it and just things flying everywhere, and they're just in shock.
Yeah, the vinyl playing itself, the book opening and closing like in Prisoner of Azkaban.
You hear the
ha
ha ha ha ha ha.
Yes.
Oh, man, it's something. Mm-hmm. And then after that, oh, yes, they start to investigate.
And also give some exposition that they think that this is a poltergeist, not a regular haunting. A poltergeist can last months. A haunting could be years.
But yeah, they're very clearly humbled.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor is drinking coffee from a tea set. Mm-hmm. But she's like shaking her hands and everything, mm-hmm. as you do. And it's that old horror cliche where it's just like you need something to drink and they're just shaking the cup and you hear the...
Yeah, because they didn't believe what they were saying. And now she sees it was like, oh, crap, they were saying the truth. I'm shaking. I need something.
And then they were telling the difference between a haunting and mm-hmm. a poltergeist. I don't know if you wrote any of that down.
Yeah, it says, I was like, a poltergeist can last a few months, even could be days, but a haunting could be years. Especially in a haunting will be a ghost chasing you no matter where you go. A poltergeist can be lashing to a place. That's kind of like the thing that they said.
Yes, which is why in Beetlejuice, the Matlins were also, they were a haunting.
Mm-hmm.
Or they were, I think they were poltergeists because they were tied into their home.
Mm-hmm. They could not get out.
Yeah. Haunting is like It Follows, where it will literally follow you anywhere. Mm-hmm. Nothing is safe.
Or like The Grudge?
The Grudge. I was thinking the same thing. That is also a curse. But
that girl will kill you if you're Amber Tamblyn or Sarah Michelle Gellar.
They will kill you in bed. It does not matter. You cannot escape. And it's great. Unless you're the person that's getting haunted.
Mm-hmm.
They do determine, though, that it is a poltergeist. I mean, we know it's a poltergeist. It's the name of the damn movie.
Yeah.
And again, Family Guy was like, they said it. They said it.
Roll credits.
They did the thing. And then they witnessed several paranormal activities. Yeah, but episodes. They hear Carol Ann talking with the mom through the TV, and she's just like, honey, let's come to my voice. I can't see you, mommy.
Mm-hmm.
She's just like, her spirit passed through me.
Well, like her. Well, oh, that's another story.
But they clearly see, and this is actually based off a Twilight Zone episode called Little Girl Lost.
Mm-hmm.
She gets pulled into another dimension. They find a hole through that dimension. And then, I mean, it's also funny, to tie it to Spielberg, the Twilight Zone movie, he directed a segment of that.
And the famous accident that happened in that movie, too.
That wasn't his segment, but yes. Also, his segment was the worst segment of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
He was the most famous director, but I know you're referring to the John Landis segment. Yeah, that's another thing. That's another accident that happened on the movie where it's like, damn, that is a curse.
Yep.
Whenever you deal with like supernatural stuff or certain characters, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, the white guy, Marty, he goes down to get something to eat and he starts having hallucinations with like, he wanted to get a steak. He was going to make a steak in the middle of the night though. I was like, really?
Everybody's going to be waking up.
Yeah. You're going to put it in a pan in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can do that, but it's just better if you get a barbecue grill outside.
Or an air fryer.
Yeah. But air fryers didn't exist.
I know.
He has a chicken wing in his mouth, and he just sees the steak is moving by itself on the counter, like the head and the faculty.
Yes!
And then it starts to just decay, and it's really gnarly effects. And then he spits out the chicken wing, and then there's a bunch of maggots in there, and he's like, ugh! And tries to wake himself up, put some water in his face. And this is where he starts to
peel himself, his rotten skin, and slowly pulling everything. And you see the whole open skin in his eyes, and oh, we see all of the pieces of meat dropping into the sink.
Oh, yeah.
This is a Toby Hooper scene. I can agree with this.
And the music's great, yes, by the way. Just in general, Jerry Goldsmith's score is really good. And yeah, that was definitely Toby Hooper. There's no way Spielberg would ever do anything that scary. Hell, you could say Temple of Doom. Temple of Doom is probably the scariest he will ever be. I don't think he'll ever direct straight up horror. I hope I'm wrong, because that would be awesome if he did that.
Yeah.
Rather than make a bunch of boring ass biopics. Come on, Steven.
Yeah.
You sappy old geezer.
Well, you don't know. We haven't seen West Side Story.
That's a musical. Still, and it's a remake.
But it's not a biopic.
His only other remake was not good. War of the Worlds.
Excuse me, War of the Worlds is fucking amazing.
It's not that good.
I beg to differ. That movie scared the crap out of me. Going back to Poltergeist.
Sure. He actually wakes up. And that was a hallucination.
Mm-hmm.
So it messes with your mind.
Yeah.
But they're just like, we need some more help. But Ryan, the black guy, he stays to help monitor stuff. They have like all these camera equipment set up and stuff. I'm like, these guys really are the Ghostbusters. they have a pretty okay budget. And the camera is just it's moving from one side to the other. It's not attached to a fan or anything like that, but
yeah,
that reminded me of Paranormal Activity 3
when they did not have the ghost traps like in Ghostbusters.
No, nor the proton packs
or the salt like in Supernatural.
Well, they are parapsychologists, they're not hunters.
They sure
and have they're Bobby. Just like, they're like, we need some more help. And then the daughter, Dana, just leaves to stay with some friends, as you do. And then we get a scene where it's all in whisper because they don't want to disturb the spirits. And then I also was thinking of Family Guy when the gay guy, Bruce, he's just like, and then I just remember that one time where this guy was playing like that, and I was like, ew.
And I was like, oh no.
Oh no.
Yeah, but
they have it's a very sweet scene.
It's a really good scene because the doctor's just like, people believe that when you go to the light, you will know all of the answers and all of your questions. You will become part of it forever. Some people, they don't know that they were gone. They want more life. They just hang around feeling unhappy, jealous. Some people get lost in the way into the light. Some people get angry in the way into the light. And so that's kind of like exposition about the ghosts, especially the way that we see a lot of ghosts walking when one of the paranormal researchers takes that, and we see all of the lights. One of them, it was a woman, but he also captured like five or six different souls that they're around the house.
A woman in white.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, they're just like, some ghosts are like people.
Mm-hmm.
Some are good, some are bad. And that's, I was just like, okay, it's good exposition and it's an organic way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought of something else, but I forgot it. Damn.
No, it's also kind of like, remember, that's also kind of like the same exposition that happened in Supernatural Season 7 when Bobby did not want to go with Death. Remember that Death tells him, you know, if you don't
come with me. Oh, yeah. I thought of my joke now. It's you get Ben Solo just going, I feel it, the pull to the light.
Yes! Thank you.
I knew you would appreciate that, man of taste.
Yes.
But yes. Also... So,
mm-hmm.
Just a quick thing. We see that Steve Craig T. Nelson, he goes to his boss because he's been missing a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, oh, Carol Ann's been missing school. Because there's no way if they actually, they're like, we haven't told the police anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, they wouldn't even believe him. Mm-hmm. No right-minded person would believe what is actually happening to them. Mm-hmm. So he has a conversation with his boss, Mr. Teague, about a new housing project going up. And they talk about more exposition, how they built over cemeteries. And they're like, even where they live right now, we built it over a cemetery. Mm-hmm. And they needed to expand the housing communities. So they said they moved the cemeteries and everything. And then he sees that, oh, they're not building far from where the Freelings live.
Mm-hmm. And he even offers like, come on, I don't want you to get on any other kind of offers. Right here, you can build a really new house. Right here, it could be phase 5, and this could be your master suite. And he even says, like, I don't see a lot of space. And then he turns around, and he sees the biggest cemetery. Oh, no, don't you worry. You will have one of the biggest houses in the settlement. And just move the bodies from the cemetery just to do more houses. Especially, you are responsible for 42% of my sales.
Gee, white people building over shit that's building over land that's not mm-hmm. theirs. It's totally not relevant in any way whatsoever. And also for
following the twist.
Yes, especially with the twist.
Yeah.
I say this as a white person that mm-hmm. lives on land that is not originally his.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
this is the introduction of Tangina.
Tangina, yes, the best character in this movie.
Yep,
Zelda Rubinstein. You have seen this little lady before, and she is really small, mm-hmm. but she has this high pitched voice, and then she always played like some supernatural person or like mm-hmm. a medium.
Yeah.
Because I think of also Teen Witch.
Mm-hmm.
Because she would play that role later. But this was the role that most people know her from.
Yeah.
Is Poltergeist. She's the little lady for Poltergeist. But she's a medium.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that she can communicate with the dead as well as the living. And then
she tells the mom, Oseka, where is the point of origin? And they determine that it's the closet because they notice that there's a part of the ceiling that it comes from the living room that is, they transported some old coins and they're trying to find out what is the point of origin. And she tells her, would you do anything for the love of your children? It will surpass anything that you believe on. It doesn't matter if you believe in Christianity or any kind of religion. This is something that you would not have not experienced before. And she was like, I will do anything for my children. The mom says,
I would do anything for love. But I won't do that. Yeah. No, they actually will.
And also she explains that Carol Ann is in a plane when other souls are with her. She has a light that reflects light. Happiness, memories. These people, they don't know that her she could be the light. They think that she is the light, but she's not. She can guide them to it. Will you help her? And also, there's a terrible presence with her. So much rage, so much betrayal. It has punched a hole in this house, and it will use whatever it can because it could use a childlike voice to manipulate Carol Ann. For us, this is the Beast.
Yes. And when I think of the Beast, I think of the Sandlot.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
I mean, little kid, I grew up with the Sandlot. Yes, she's only 5 years old, even though the mom is like, she's just a baby. I'm like, mm-hmm. no, she's a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
She ain't a baby, but I get it. She's her baby.
Mm-hmm.
But she's just like, oh yeah, Carol Ann's alive, and she has a very strong, because she was born in the house, she has the strongest connection to it, mm-hmm. which is why the spirits went after her, mm-hmm. and why they are taking her. because essentially she is
in the upside down. Gives,
pretty much. And she warns everybody. They realize that the portal entrance is in the closet.
Mm-hmm.
And they find out that the exit is at the top of the living room ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
They know this because they threw some tennis balls into it.
Yes.
And then this is when we get into the shouty portion of the film, which is pretty much the entire last 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
This is also just one of those things where it was like, it's a 2-hour movie. Mm-hmm. It's very briskly paced, but it doesn't drag on.
No, it's very well paced. Not a boring moment. It has great pace.
Very good pacing, which, I mean, some movies, they either go too fast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I have to criticize last week's, Beetlejuice went by way faster than I expected.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a good movie, but I would have liked if it would slow down just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Or it just goes on forever.
Yeah.
But that's the bad sign. I'd rather it go fast. But then they determine, we got to have somebody that can go in there and get Carol Ann herself.
Mm-hmm.
So they tie a rope around the mother because the father is just like, what if I do that? And she's like, no, somebody's got to be strong enough to pull me out.
Mm-hmm.
And then this is where you get the music is swelling and everything's getting louder. And the little lady is just like, don't go towards the light. And then they have a battle of going towards the light, not going towards the light. Take a drink every time they say light.
Also a great kiss between Crazy Nelson and the mom. And in the beautiful shade of blue before she goes into the light. That's an amazing
beautiful
shot.
Yeah. Beautiful cinematography.
Mm-hmm.
By who did the cinematography? Matthew F. Leonetti.
Mm-hmm.
He also did Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Weird Science, Jagged Edge, Strange Days, and the best Star Trek movie, Star Trek First Contact.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm going to fight you on that.
Interesting.
I think First Contact is better than Wrath of Khan, although Wrath of Khan is... Wrath of Khan is the best of the original series. First Contact is the best of the Next Generation series. Yes, I'm a bit of a Trekkie. Not as much as a Star Wars nerd, but I do know more than most people.
This got interesting.
This is SETI Alpha 6.
And then she even says, I was like, please, no one don't let go. And we also...
I'll never let go, Jack.
Never let go. Then Gina, she's like, come on over, children. Cross over. Go into the light. And Kratos was like, you said that they're cannot go into the light.
Oh, yeah. And also, they established that the tennis balls, they're full of ectoplasm.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was like, oh, why are they in jam? It's like all gross. It's like afterbirth.
Yeah, Ivan Reitman was like, I have an idea. He was watching the movie, like, I have an idea.
And it's purple.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Ghostbusters 2 for you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was going to say that.
Mm-hmm.
And then as he's screaming and trying to pull out the rope, a big head pops into the closet. Great scare. And Chris was like, ah! And then I was like, we see from the living room, we see the portal opening, and we see the mom and Carol Ann in the pink goo.
Yeah. And so it's a very intense scene. Lots of things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they get back, but they're not waking up. And the dad's freaking out. He's just like, breathe, just breathe. Come on. Puts him in the bath to clean him off. And then, okay, they're good. And they have the daughter back. And that's when the whimsical music comes. And Tajina is like, this house is clean. And you would think that would be the end of the movie, right? Nah. No. We still got a little bit more left because while most of the spirits have moved on, the beast...
One of them didn't.
Yes, the beast He did not. So they're planning on moving out. Oh, yes. And the mom has, again, like Beetlejuice, gray streaks in her hair now, ever since she crossed over. And they're just like, you're not going to do anything about that? Nah. And they're spending their last night in the house. What could possibly go wrong? Dana, the daughter, once again, spending the night with friends. And then the little ones are there. And again, there is going to be a thunderstorm because it just never stops fucking raining in California. I'm sure every Californian would love for it to rain every night like that. And this is where we get, for me, the scariest scene.
Ooh.
With the clown.
The clown one. Interesting.
Yes. So, Robbie's clown doll is, again, freaking him out. And then he looks up because he hid his face under the covers again. Clown's not there.
Ooh.
And then he looks under the bed. Nothing. But then when he comes up, it scares the shit out of you just because you're like, oh, man. I wasn't expecting that. And he has an evil face and he's wrapping his arms around his neck and just shit starts hitting the fan. Because then after that, once again, they're trying to get pulled into
the light,
which is like the fucking
that looks like kind of like a throat.
It does look like a throat. And I was reminded of, for some reason, The Frighteners.
Yes! Great reference. Good movie, though.
Yeah. And that's a Peter Jackson movie. But after that, this is when everybody just starts screaming. And I'll let you finish wrapping this up.
So the mom, she's taking a bath and she hears the screaming. And she's like, it's like, no! And then she's trying to find out what is the hell is going on. But then she cannot go back into the house after she got out. And it was like, oh, my God. And she's hearing all of the screams. But then she goes outside and she's screaming for help. And it was like, please, someone help me. And then she goes into the pool. And all of a sudden, everything is shaking. And then we see a lot of bodies risen from the mud. And that scared the crap out of me when I was a kid. And she's just screaming and saying more bodies. And more bodies is pulling her into the mud as she's trying to get out from the mud. And then she gets saved by one of the neighbors. And she's begging for the neighbors to help her. But they're like, no, they don't want to get in. And then she walks inside the house. And this scene still scared the crap out of me. When she sees the door of her kids and the hallway starts to feeling endless. And the way that it shot the children for her trying to still run, try to get her. Also the power of love that she got into the door.
I mean, also the neighbor's name is Ben. It's like poetry. It rhymes.
It rhymes.
Anyway.
Go on. And so she gets into the room. And still, the light is trying to pull Caroline and Robbie. And she's like, no, I will not let you do this. And then she pulls out her hand and tells her, Robbie, grab my hand. And then Robbie says, come on, Caroline. And she grabs both of them. As she's trying to get out, we see, I love this reaction shot of Creighton. It was like, oh, no, not again. The way that he gets out of the car and he's seeing all of the lights, I was like, fuck, we without screaming, he tries to get in, and a big ass corpse gets out and blocking him. Please help us! And we see that the boss, I don't know how he got there. He was already next to Christina, so I was like, "You motherfucker! You develop these houses. You only move the headstones." Iconic scene. He didn't say motherfucker, of course. This is a PG movie, but he said, "You son of a bitch." But amazing. This is the twist. It was, all of the houses were developed in a cemetery and ancient burial ground. So that's why the poltergeist is so powerful.
Yep. And the reason why the boss was there is also because he gave him a ride.
So Trella forgot, or, that's true. Mm-hmm.
I believe that was what it was. And just gave him his car and stuff. Or he mm-hmm. rode with him. Mm-hmm. And they know the house is literally imploding on itself mm-hmm. at this point. And then all the neighbors obviously are coming outside and seeing what happening. Is happening to the Freeling house. And the house is just so fed up with the rest of this movie that it implodes on itself.
I know.
And it's great.
I love also the anxiety, even me as a kid and me as an adult, of how he's trying to get to his keys on his damn pocket as they're already in the car. And she's like, please get the fucking keys. Please
don't go faster.
Car.
Must go faster.
Yeah.
I was surprised that the key didn't break in the ignition.
Mm-hmm.
That gave me more anxiety than anything else. I was just like, God, if that key breaks. But literally, the beast is trying to get them.
Mm-hmm. When one last cadaver thrown into the fucking car as they put in reverse, and we see
even,
Dana.
They even throw over a fucking is it what's the kind of car that Herbie is?
A Beetle?
Yeah, there's a Beetle that gets flipped over, mm-hmm. and just there's even in the background there's fire shooting out, and shit just gets crazy.
And Dana gets out of it. She just got a ride. And I love this shot of her closer. She's like, what is happening? And it was like, just get in. Get into the car now.
And oh, yeah. And coffins start to pop up. Mm-hmm. That's the thing.
In all
the
bodies start the coming house. Out.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then the skeletons come out. We're pretty convinced that they were all real.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously. Oh, yeah, yeah. He was with his boss. His boss was the passenger. And then after that, they all get the hell out of there in the station wagon. They drive off.
And the house technically slowly gets dragged into the damn hole of the closet and poof, it's yep. gone.
Then they stay the night in a hotel. They manage to have gotten away.
I love and the shot of them walking so damn tired. They just give zero fucks of, like, they have gone through so much shit, and I love the feeling of them just walking in, and I love the last shot of the movie, opening the door and Christina and some, fuck you, TV.
Yep, doesn't want to tempt fate. And that's the end of the movie.
Yeah.
So, do you have any thoughts on Poltergeist before we give our rating in the socials?
This is an amazing film. I'm surprised that it's PG. I still cannot believe it's PG. It's an amazing way to introduce horror into a children, because I saw it when I was 7, and it scared the crap out of me. But also, I think it's also necessary, even though you're not will get the references or like the understanding about the static of TV or a lot of stuff. This movie is effective. That will be like my closing thoughts before giving the rating in you, buddy.
So, yeah, now that I'm older and able to watch this with an analytical mind, it's a really well-made movie. It's a great mix of both family film and just straight up horror. They balance each other really well. Tobe Hooper and Steven Spielberg's styles really do help. And it's weird seeing so much whimsy in a horror movie, but that's also what kind of makes it unique. And you get the scary moments like the tree and the clown. No, I was really impressed by this movie. There's a reason why it's always on the top 100 like lists. And it is a staple. If you need an education in horror, this is just not, it's not one where it relies on gore or kills or anything. Nobody gets killed in this movie. It's just straight up just a scary ghost story. And it's a damn good one. What about you, bud? Any closing thoughts?
Also talking about closing thoughts, the sequels are more violent. Talking about comparing them to the original. And because that's the thing that you just said, because it feels kind of like more family friendly. Also, this was before the birth of PG-13, before the release of Temple of Doom. But this is an amazing film. Also, does it, like the thing that I said before, this will be a great way to introduce horror to children. Because I noticed that right now they're trying to bring back horror to children again, like with that Night Books movie and the Fear Street films. I think this will be a great way to introduce horror to children. I think they call it gateway horror. So it will be a great way to introduce it. It does, for me, it doesn't feel dated. Just if you think that it's dated, just put that into the side and just focus into the story.
Yeah, the best stories are, the stories are timeless, even if a lot of the technology is not. Mm-hmm. But even then, a lot of it still holds up really, really well. There's no modern slang or anything like that. No reference to current events, so it just feels timeless.
Yeah.
And for these reasons alone, I want to give Poltergeist a 9. It's gonna be very high up. It's been a while since I've gotten like a 9, so it's a good return to form. A lot of them are like 7, 8, 8.5s. But no, this is a step above. And of the two movies we've watched, this is the better film. I had good experience with both, but maybe that'll change with our movie next week. That's more of a family fun movie.
No, and a classic too.
It is a classic. These are all classics, but this is classic in a different way.
Yeah.
Like this is the one where people started to take, I mean, there are certain movies where horror was taken seriously, and this is one of those movies.
Yeah, like I will give it a 9.5. Not a 10, but a 9.5, because this movie is still amazing. This is technically my second, third time watching it ever. This movie is damn amazing, and I really love that I got to see it again as an adult.
I swear to God, this Poltergeist curse.
Thank you, motorcycle and fucking car that gets centered with the motorcycle.
Background noise is just going to become part of our podcast, I guess, at this point. Raul, you might want to mute. There we go. And yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at Master of Puns 196. Every word starts with a capital letter. You can also follow me on Instagram at Billy Batson's Lightning. Nothing is capitalized. You can also follow our main show podcast at SYNS Pod. Give us a 5-star review and write us a review on Apple Podcasts. Like that asshole. Hopefully nicer things. And you can also listen to us on Apple, Google, Stitcher, or not just Apple, but Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Anchor, wherever podcasts are listened to. Just give us a like, give us a retweet. Any view helps. And anybody that listens is just the best. I'm talking to you, Maggie, directly this time. I know you're listening to this when you're going to work. And also Robbie, Matthew,
Nolan,
Raul, all you guys and are just the best.
Also, thank you for standing with us for almost 100 episodes. This is almost like around the 88th episode. And thank you so much. And I cannot believe that we got to the 88th episode. I cannot believe we got this far. We're almost at the 100th.
Yeah, we have something special planned for the 100th. It's definitely, it'll be fun. It'll be a fun thing. I hope it's not at the end of this year, though. I kind of want to save it for next year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, also depends on how we're releasing all of the episodes that we have.
How fast Raul opens Gravity Falls episodes, which is like 3 months apart from each other. So
it's for you to feel the hiatuses between the episodes.
Yeah, but there's a certain point where it's just like, dude, you just finish it. Just eat the damn orange.
Finish it from evil.
Anyway.
But you can follow me at RobertRDC on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and on TikTok at RobertRDC. And please, and also, as always, see you next summer. Dun, 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 dun. They're here.